Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us once again, very special guest, U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. She has served in the Senate since 2009. Senator Gillibrand is currently on the Senate Armed Services Committee, Intelligence Committee, Aging Committee, and Agricultural Committee. Welcome back to Reaching Out.
Thanks, Greg.
You just came off of what the publication Political just called Gillibrand's big year. Can you tell us why it was such a big year for you?
Well, a lot of the work that I've been working on for between 2 and 12 years has come to fruition, and we got a lot of laws made. So one bill, my first bill that I started working on was to deal with the fact that New York suffers from very significant gun violence. And I met with families across New York who had lost loved ones. And so I wrote a bill to make it a federal crime to traffic weapons across state lines and have large penalties of 10 and 15 years for traffickers and kingpins. And so this bill finally was part of the bipartisan bill. It passed into law. It included money for mental health, for violence disruption. And that is a testament to all the work that the Moms Who Demand Action have focused on and all the other gun reform groups. And so that bill passed into law. Second, I've been working on issues related to sexual assault in the military and sexual harassment and sexual assault in the workplace. And the two pieces of legislation I wrote to address those also passed into law. In the workplace, that changed 60 million employment contracts overnight. So if you're harassed or assaulted in the workplace, you can now sue in a court of law. You don't have to go to mandatory arbitration, and you can not have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. The third area was veterans. I was working a lot for veterans who were exposed to burn pits and who had these horrible cancers that were very similar to the 9/11 diseases that people sustained because they worked on the pile and they lived near Ground Zero. And so we created the same coalition to get healthcare for our military members who were exposed to the toxins released at burn pits. And we also renewed the 9/11 health bill, which has to be renewed almost every 5 years to make sure the right amount of funding is there. So we did another funding measure for the 9/11 first responders and families who live at Ground Zero. So a lot of really good pieces of legislation passed. We also had a number of provisions in the infrastructure bill, as well as the COVID bills. In the infrastructure bill, we have a provision called Build Local, Hire Local, which is going to be relevant for a lot of union members in New York who are focused on building and construction, electronics, as well as plumbing. That one says that if you're doing infrastructure, particularly infrastructure that's to rectify sins of the past, whether it was the Robert Moses era infrastructure that cut up Black communities or disadvantaged low-income communities, that you have to hire local workers. And that provision creates a preference. Second, I had a provision in one of the COVID bills to train more healthcare workers to create a health force so that money could flow to hospitals or not-for-profits or community health centers to say, if you're willing to train mid-career and entry-level community health workers, we'll pay for it. And New York City applied immediately, health and hospitals, and got $35 million and has already trained 500 new healthcare workers with that. So lots of good things happened in the last 2 years and many other things beyond that, but really making strides in a lot of areas that I think we have to address.
You mentioned something that made me think of something that happened last week. You mentioned every 5 years, the 9/11 bill has to be renewed. Senator Rick Scott had mentioned every 5 years he wants to have Medicare and Social Security looked at every 5 years. And then when President Biden mentioned it in the State of the Union speech, the Republicans seem to want to run away from that. And your colleague from Kentucky, He mentioned that that was Rick Scott bill. He owned it, but he said it's Rick Scott bill, not the not our bill. So can you talk to us about that bill? Because I know a lot of listeners are listening and they're concerned about Social Security, because I know I'm going to be 60 next month. And I've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars into Social Security. And my father told me, Greg, you're not paying it for you. You're paying it for your grandmother, and your children will pay it for you. And that's how we do it. It's sort of the original pay it forward.
So what we know is that certainly Tim Scott had a bill to really reassess Social Security every 5 years. And Mike Lee stated that he'd like to pull it up by its roots. So there is a rumbling within the Republican Party amongst at least those two that they are trying to undermine our Social Security, despite the fact that this is our social insurance plan. We've bought into this program our whole working lives. It's our money. It's our investment, and it's our social insurance. And so they can't take it away. And what Democrats want to do is make sure we shore it up and strengthen it. One of the bills I have with Senator Sanders and others is to blow the cap so that all income levels invest into Social Security. So if you have a billionaire, that billionaire is paying a certain percentage of his whole income into Social Security. So it's there for everyone else, because it is a social safety net. And it's meant to make sure our older Americans and our disabled Americans, our Americans with disabilities, do not have to worry about living in poverty.
Now, they're not the only two that's been uncovered that want to uproot Social Security. There's Ron DeSantis, who's the governor of Florida. And I heard it and I saw it for my own eyes that he, when he was in Congress, he also mentioned revamping in Social Security. Can you tell us what he was talking about?
So I don't know what DeSantis said, but his policies have been extreme in every regard. He is ultra, ultra right wing. He does not support working people. He does not support women. He does not support immigrant families. He is somebody who's really created a hateful and divisive government for Florida. He's really tried to demonize kids. He's demonized all different types of people in his state. And unfortunately, he is the flavor of the month for the Republican Party. So it's not helpful.
He's also demonized Disney and Mickey Mouse. So who fights with Mickey Mouse? That's ridiculous.
Well, he's very ideologic, and he is so ideologic, he doesn't want any other ideas in his state. So if you don't support his view of the world, he's going to ban you or harm you or demean you.
Yes. Oh, have mercy on our souls. What are your priorities for the labor movement and working people in upcoming Congress and Senate?
Well, one of the most important things that we should continue to fight for is the PRO Act. We don't have a Democratic House, so it'll be very difficult to pass that in this Congress. But as a consequence, I'm going to work very hard on flipping the House so we can have a governing majority in the House and increase our majority in the Senate so that we can actually pass it. I think that's the highest priority for the labor movement. I also have tried to do legislation to help working people everywhere, things like affordable daycare, universal pre-K, a national paid leave plan. Those are all benefits that labor does not offer and does not negotiate for. And so I have an ambition to make sure it's available to all workers.
Well, in New York City, we have paid leave. We have vacation time. We have holidays. We have sick time. And we also have the Family Medical Leave Act. As long as you have time, you can get time off and paid leave.
Yep. So we have paid leave in New York State. We're very lucky. But other states do not have it. Maybe only, I don't know, how many, 16 states have paid leave?
Yes.
14, something like that. A dozen or so.
So we're very fortunate.
there's just a lot of places that are very rad that don't have it. So I'm actually working with some Republicans right now to find out if there's any common ground on having a national paid leave plan or investments for affordable daycare or investments for universal pre-K.
Okay. So let me mention something because I was watching the news the other day and I saw that the Affordable Care Act is very popular. It wasn't popular at the time, but it's popular now. And there's a lot of red states that are thriving off of the Affordable Care Act. Can you just expound on when the Affordable Care Act was first passed and how it was really late Senator John McCain had saved it by putting the thumbs down. One thumb saved American healthcare.
It did. Well, so we started working on that bill during the Obama presidency, and we worked very hard on trying to create a thoughtful way to provide healthcare for all. It wasn't perfect. It was just a first positive step. I prefer a Medicare for all plan where people could buy in at any rate at a price they could afford, percentage of income or some other structure. But we couldn't get that far. We also tried to get Medicare for 55 and older, but we had one Democrat who stood against us. So Obamacare was the final compromise, and it at least provided access to healthcare for everyone with a subsidy program to make sure it was affordable for most workers. And it did not apply to some people, so it wasn't as universal as it could have been, but it was a good first step. We also had the challenge of some states not having enough providers, only having one provider or two providers. And then we had to improve upon it to make sure we had more coverage and more coverage and more access to more people. And so we've continued to improve upon it over the last few years. Republicans, unfortunately, have like run against it nonstop. And when they were in charge, they tried to get rid of it. And that's why what John McCain did to stand up to President Trump made such a difference.
Yeah. You know, you always heard repeal and replace. The repeal was there, but there was never a bill written by any Republican or anyone else to replace the current system that we have. So if somebody can make it better, we're all for better. But there was never anything put forward to make it better.
Never, never. And they never answered the questions about, is healthcare a right or a privilege? They always believed it was a privilege. And it should be a basic human right, and it should be provided for all.
It's unfortunate that those who have so much want other people to have so little.
Very selfish.
Yes. You're listening to Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. Our very special guest once again is our Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. And we're talking about issues that affect you. Other than fighting for labor issues, what are some of your priorities?
Oh, so this Congress, as I mentioned, we really have to address the care economy. It got left off the agenda last cycle. So passing a national paid leave plan, passing affordable daycare and universal pre-K are very high priorities. I also serve on the Intelligence Committee and the Armed Services Committee. So I want to continue to work on getting our strongest defensive force available. So I created a National Cyber Academy, which will be accepting students in 2024. It'll be like an ROTC type program where there's been 200 schools that have already been vetted. A few of them are in New York State, and they've already been vetted and have the right cyber curriculum. And if you do 5 years of public service in a cyber defensive job for the U.S. government, you can get your school paid for free. And so that's a great way for free college in exchange for public service. I also have been working on those weather balloons. So one of the things that I wrote into law in the last 2 years was creating an office to review all unidentified aerial phenomenon, to look at them carefully, scientifically, and analyze them with data from many sources to assess what they are. And so we've assessed at least 300 plus unidentified aerial phenomenon that have been seen in the last 20 years, over the last 2 years. And now we know what these balloons look like, how they work, what their trajectory is, what their flight patterns are. We now know who's using drones. And it's a way to make us more secure, less vulnerable to spying. And it's why we were able to assess these balloons from China so quickly.
There were at least four in the last week that was shot down.
Yep.
Without giving away something that you can't give away, because intel is intel and we don't want to give away any secrets, what can you tell us about it?
Well, the first one was a Chinese spy balloon, and we were able to shoot it down and recover some of the materials of it, so we know what it is and what the technology that they were using to spy on America. The next three, we don't know yet because we haven't recovered them yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're similar technology, similar type of balloons. But one that was shot down over the Yukon, we're working with Canadian government to retrieve that. One was shot down over the coast of Alaska, and that's been much harder because of the cold weather and the rough seas. And then Lake Huron. So we should be able to recover that one. So we're focused on getting the actual physical objects so we can assess what they are, what technology is being used. But we've been reviewing these type of unidentified aerial phenomenon for 2 years, and we have been able to go through over 300 cases. We don't assess all of them yet. We haven't figured out, I think, about 100 of them, but when you can identify things and know what they are, you can more easily track them when you see them. And that's why we could track these objects that we just shut down, because of the work of this office called the AARO office, the Aero office. It's in the Department of Defense, and it's extremely effective.
Now, there's so many tools at our disposal. Now, let's talk about the debt ceiling. How important it is, and a lot of people may not understand that we're actually paying bills that we've already accumulated.
Right.
We're not creating new bills, so any budgets can be negotiated. So it's kind of, in my view, it's kind of foolish for you to say, I'm not going to pay what I already spent.
Correct. It's like a credit card bill. You have to pay your credit card bill. You can't say, oh, yeah, let's negotiate about those bills that I already incurred, the things I already bought, the things I already spent money on. You have to pay it. And it's a debt that must be paid. And so what the Republicans are talking about is absurd. You can't negotiate what you've already spent. You have to pay those bills, and then you can negotiate your going forward budgets. And that is the appropriate role of Congress. But for the head of the Budget Committee to say that the debt ceiling's not real is an outrageous statement.
Anybody who's an accountant and a fiscal monitor would not make such a
such an outrageous statement.
Yes. Yeah. So that is something. And it's amazing. And I believe it's just maybe 20 Republicans that's driving the whole Republican Congress.
It's a pretty small group of people, and they are definitely detached from reality.
Yeah, and they have a lot of other people detached from reality, because these bills have to be paid.
Absolutely.
And
it's going to be a real test of whether McCarthy has any control at all over his caucus. And so we'll see if he does. I don't know.
I was always told, and I'm of the thought, you finish the way you start. You didn't start well, it doesn't end well.
Well, that's what I really liked about President Biden's State of the Union address. He said, let's finish the job. And he just had that great refrain about finish the job, finish the job. And, you know, he had a lot of success to declare with all his bipartisan bills, the infrastructure bill, the CHIPS Act that does semiconductor manufacturing, AI, quantum computing. Really important bill for our military edge and our intelligence edge over other adversaries. He talked about how he brought Congress together to get really common sense, smart things done. A lot of the COVID relief thing packages helped our healthcare system. And then the one bill we did on our own, which was the bill to lower the cost of prescription drug prices, the Republicans want to unwind, which is like the greatest thing for our seniors, to have the five major drugs they use be less expensive, to have a cap every year of $2,000, to have a 35 monthly cap on insulin. That's life changing for so many older Americans. And so he had a lot of good stories to tell, a lot of success stories. And I was very, very energized by his speech. But I love the refrain of let's get the job done. Let's finish the job.
So if I'm a senior, he wants to lower my medical costs, my prescription costs. He wants to maintain my Social Security.
Yep.
To maintain my health care, my Medicare. And why would I want to vote for anybody else? Why would I want to...
I agree. Understand. I think he's done a great job. Yeah. And, you know, President Biden is a man of great experience, but also great humility. And it's not all about him. And so he can be a steward and really work with Congress on their ideas to move really important legislation across the finish line. And he's never afraid to walk across the aisle and talk to and work with Republicans, which is why all these bills, including a gun bill with my trafficking provisions and all that mental health money, he gets it done. And so that really matters. And I think that's why the Senate, we were able to retain the majority in the Senate, and it's how we didn't lose as many seats in the House. But my ambition for 2024 is to win some of those House seats back. And since I'm running for Senate for my reelection, I'm going to make sure I help organize those five House seats and have coordinated campaigns so that we can hit the ground running and try to win them back.
Well, I could tell you one House seat in my prediction won't be there, and that's the one in Nassau County, the third congressional district, because whether you're on the right or left, the folks here in Nassau County want George Santos gone.
Yeah, he's just...
They want him
something gone. We could have never imagined.
Look, you always got to know who you're running against, and you want to make sure the public knows who you're running against.
Yeah.
And every day is a new adventure for him. And does he have to resign? No. But does he have to answer for all of those financial crimes and money missing and everything else? Yes. And sooner than later, he will be answering for those things.
That's true.
At this time, do you have any other initiatives that you think we should know about?
So I'm doing a master plan on aging, which I'm really excited about. We're creating a platform of all the things that our older Americans need to thrive. Affordable housing, which applies to everyone. We need much more affordable housing all across our state. Lower prescription drug prices and lower medical costs. Being able to age in place so that they can have home health aides or the supports they need at home. Making sure they have access to transportation so they get to and from their doctor's appointments. And making sure that they have more tools to protect against cybercrime. Our seniors are constantly being barraged with senior fraud, with these scams on both their computers, on their phones, scams in the mail. It's just incessant. And so seniors are constantly being targeted. So give them more protections and more support so they can avoid those criminals.
Thank you. That is a lot.
We also have a bunch of stuff we're doing in the Farm Bill for food security for our seniors, for our kids, for summer time when kids aren't at school, for breakfast programs, just a lot more investment in nutritious food for families so that there's less food insecurity. Post-COVID, there was a great deal of people who've lost their jobs, lost their stability, and making sure food security is there for them is a priority. And I could do a lot of that in the Farm Bill, along with a bunch of rural development, rural broadband, small business development, anything in rural America, which, as you know, our state's really diverse. We have the city, but we have a lot of rural areas all across upstate New York, even on Long Island. So we have to make sure we prepare support for all parts of the state. And I'll do that in the Farm Bill, which is being negotiated this year.
Thank you. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reaching Out. Thank you, Kirsten Gillibrand, Senator of New York State, for coming back to Reaching Out. We really appreciate it, and we appreciate the update. You're welcome to come back anytime you want.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate you so much.
All right.
God bless.
God bless.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.